Good morning. An Anchorage jury has awarded a $3.5 million judgment to a 76-year-old man who claimed he was wrongfully fired. Paul Blakeslee was fired in 2008 as he prepared to report what he considered improper conduct by a supervisor. Blakeslee was working for Shaw Environment and Infrastructure, a company hired to maintain facilities at Fort Richardson and Fort Wainwright. The supervisor was part owner of another private company that was leasing equipment to Shaw, often without competitive bidding, with the expense passed on to the military. Blakeslee says he discussed the matter with the supervisor on a Friday, and he was fired the following Monday. Jurors last week concluded Shaw was wrong to fire Blakeslee and did so in retaliation for reporting on a supervisor. A new fiscal note shows the latest version of the proposed oil tax overhaul could cost Alaska between $4.5 billion and $5.8 billion through 2019. That's based on a forecast for oil prices and production calling for a continued decline during that period and prices between $109 and $118 a barrel. The note is higher than those accompanied versions of the bill proposed by the governor and the Senate Resources Committee. The measure, as it passed the Senate, would, among other things, set the base tax rate at 35% and provide a $5 allowance for each taxable barrel of oil produced. It also includes a tax break for oil from new fields and new oil from legacy fields. Supporters say Senate Bill 21 will lead to new investment and production, while critics call it a giveaway. It's one of the more lucrative fisheries in Southeast and also a sign of spring. The Sitka herring fishery goes on two-hour notice today at 11 o'clock. The announcement came Friday from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. It means if Fish and Game calls an opening, the fleet has just 2 hours to make it to the location of the fishery. But what prompts the two-hour notice? KCAW's Ed Ronco has more on the story.
Before the fishery can open, state biologists like Dave Gordon look at samples of the fish, and they look at the eggs, or roe, to see how far along they are developmentally. A sample taken Sunday shows 8.3% mature roe, and two samples on Friday showed 7.2% and 5.6% mature roe. So, what does that mean?
Basically, it's by weight, the percentage of eggs versus the total weight of the fish.
Here's the quick version of how it works. A fishing boat takes a sample catch. They weigh all the fish.
And that includes males and females.
And then they start to extract the roe. Now, test sets usually come in tons. So let's say the sample is 100 tons. You extract the roe, or the eggs, from the herring, and you look at the ones that are developed. Those are called mature roe. And if you find, among that 100 tons, if you find 8 tons of mature roe,
then it's an 8% sample, basically, for mature roe. Does that make sense?
The fishery goes on two-hour notice as the percentage of mature roe starts creeping up toward 10%.
You get below 10%, and just the cost of handling and processing versus the roe recovery is it just isn't profitable.
But it's tricky, too. The fish are valued for their roe still in the sack, which is sold as a food item in Japan. The higher the percentage of mature roe, the higher the price fishermen get for their catch. But if they wait too long,
and that's the game.
The fish spawn, they eject their eggs, and the commercial fishery is over. And that could be an expensive problem. Now, the next natural question is how expensive? Well, prices for herring aren't really known yet.
I understand the price is going to be good, so I expect it to be as good as last year.
And what was last year?
Knew you were going to ask that. And it's still kind of
Sitka herring, as it turns out, brought in about $640 a ton in 2012. That puts the value of the fishery last year at about $8.5 million ex vessel. Ex vessel means the price right off the boat. Of course, the Sitka herring fishery is about more than a calculation of mature roe or ex vessel value. It is the subject of documentaries. It is, to many, the sign that spring has begun. And it also has its critics. Subsistence gatherers of herring roe have argued in years past that the state's quotas are too high. This year's quota is just over 11,500 tons. It's the lowest since 2006. But last year, the quota was nearly 29,000 tons. The fleet caught less than half of it last year before the fish were too far gone. This is Ed Ronco in Sitka.
May feel like spring over in Sitka. Different story up north. Road crews have just reopened the Steese Highway at Eagle Summit. Drifting snow brought on by high wind had closed a 15-mile stretch of the highway northeast of Fairbanks that terminates at Circle. Highway officials had lowered gates to prevent vehicles from attempting to use the road. The State Department of Transportation reopened the highway yesterday but warned drivers to expect drifting snow and road crews. Mother Nature is still trying to make up its mind for the capital city area. Rain in the forecast for today and numerous rain showers for tonight with temperatures between 34 and 40 degrees with winds to about 20 miles per hour for this afternoon. And then rain showers and snow showers mixed for tomorrow. Just snow showers for tomorrow night. Temperatures between 30 and 39 degrees. And then the forecast for the rest of the week and into the weekend calls for a mixture of rain and snow. Currently 38 degrees at the airport, 36 degrees downtown Juneau. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. The executive in charge of Shell's troubled Arctic drilling program is stepping down. David Lawrence was Shell's vice president for North American exploration. He's been with the company for almost 30 years. Now a spokesman says he's leaving, quote, by mutual consent. A source in the company said that it is not a firing. Last week, the Department of the Interior released its review of Shell's Arctic program. Interior's investigators said Shell was not fully prepared for logistical challenges that it faced in the Arctic. Lawrence made headlines a year ago when he told a Dow Jones reporter that drilling in the Arctic would be, quote, relatively easy. The recent reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act had many applauding its new protections for LGBT victims and illegal immigrants. All three members of Alaska's congressional delegation supported the bill. One of the reauthorization's new, more controversial provisions granting tribal courts jurisdictions over non-natives for domestic violence crimes committed in Indian country has reopened a long simmering debate about tribal power in Alaska. APRN's Peter Granitz has more on the story.
Myron Nanning is the president of the Association of Village Council Presidents. He says tribes in the lower 48 are celebrating the new authority they've won, but not in Alaska, because Nanning says the state does not recognize tribal powers.
The state's position is that anybody that moves into a village that's not a non-tribal member should not be handled by a local tribal court, but, you know, we move into urban centers ourselves and then we're subject to state courts.
The federal government still recognizes Alaska tribes, even though most relinquished Aboriginal rights and territory, known as Indian Country, when Congress passed the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Residents in Metlakatla opted out of ANCSA. Metlakatla is the only reservation in the state and the only federally recognized Indian country in Alaska. Senator Lisa Murkowski inserted an amendment in the Violence Against Women Act that, she says, was clearly designed to ensure Metlakatla's increased court jurisdiction.
In Alaska, the only Indian country, the only reservation is Metlakatla. So I wanted to make sure that Metlakatla was going to be treated similarly as to all other reservations, all other land in Indian country.
But there's been pushback from Nanning and others who say more should have been done to make sure the new provision applied to all Alaska tribes. Senator Murkowski says the Violence Against Women Act was not the place to hash out territorial disputes. And to the tribes who were looking to gain increased rights, she says that conversation can be had at a later time.
I think that there are some who viewed this as an opportunity to gain an inch on this issue and then kind of build on it from there.
The U.S. Supreme Court affirmed the state's lack of Indian country in 1998. Senator Murkowski says Congress would need to amend the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act to create Indian country. John Havelock was the Alaska Attorney General when the Native Claims Settlement Act passed. He says the act was described as an alternative to what at the time was considered a failing reservation system and was not designed to take away tribal authority.
There was not any side discussion of tribal authority. In fact, I think a lot of people assumed that the village corporation system would replace any tribal jurisdiction. But when you think about it and look at it, you can see, well, wait a minute.
Mike Garrity is the current Attorney General for Alaska.
The state's position is that we're we're in favor of the law and it currently exists and the jurisdiction that the tribal courts currently have.
Garrity says state courts have jurisdiction over the entire state.
These people, whether they're members or non-members of the tribe, they're also citizens of the state of Alaska. They have constitutional rights under our state constitution.
In Indian country, tribal courts have sole jurisdiction within the designated boundaries, and state courts have none.
I'm not in favor of disrupting that balance and creating, you know, 229 checkerboard, 229 jurisdictions and tribal court jurisdictions, and you know, where the physical boundaries of those would be, who knows?
Because there are not defined borders like the reservation system has. Garrity says the state cooperates with tribal courts on issues under the Indian Child Welfare Act and child support cases. It also recognizes and enforces protective orders from certain tribal courts. Senator Murkowski says the state needs to be pushed on the issue of tribal jurisdiction, that the state has for too long feared relinquishing any authority to the tribes. She says she's introducing a plan that would cross-deputize village public safety officers. It would allow them to hand out punishments throughout a village.
Fines or forfeiture or community service or even banishment. And it gives them that authority. This is something that we've been trying to get the state to come round on. I think we've made huge progress.
The plan is being reviewed by both tribal leaders and state officials. And in Murkowski's eyes, it gives the state a chance to see there is nothing to fear in granting tribes more authority. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
A Ketchikan Superior Court judge has sentenced a 37-year-old man to more than 50 years in prison for sexual assault of a child. Jake Anderson was sentenced Friday for first-degree sexual abuse of a minor, two counts of second-degree sexual assault, two counts of incest, and possession of child pornography. Anderson's charges stem from incidents between January of 2009 and June of 2012. Anderson was arrested in July of 2012 after shooting himself twice in the jaw as Alaska state troopers arrived at his home. Superior Court Judge William Carey called Anderson pure evil during the sentencing hearing. Weather forecast for the camp. Little City calls for some cloudy skies and some rain showers for today and tonight. Maybe a little bit of snow mixed in with those rain showers for tomorrow and tomorrow night. Temperatures today between 34 and 40 degrees and temperatures tomorrow predominantly in the 30s. Currently 38 degrees at the airport. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. In the headlines, a 61-year-old Anchorage man has been sentenced to more than 3 years in prison for an investment fraud scheme that took in more than $300,000. U.S. District Court Judge H. Russell Holland sentenced Donald Lee Smith to 37 months in prison and 3 years of supervised release afterward. He also ordered Smith to pay over $316,000 in restitution. Prosecutors say he took in money from investors and lenders in 2007 and 2008. And did not tell them that he was using a substantial portion to gamble in casinos rather than invest in properties. He was convicted of one count of wire fraud and one count of money laundering. Invest in education is the rally cry of the week in the state capitol as the Senate completes its work on the state operating and mental health budgets. Sue Hall of Fairbanks puts it this way.
Alaska's future really is in our classrooms right now.
Hall testified before a partial Senate Finance Committee meeting on Saturday. Representing the Association of Alaska School Boards, she reminded lawmakers of their constitutional mandate to fund school operations.
Education is an essential. It's your only constitutionally mandated responsibility. Smart states don't treat education as just another line item.
While there is funding in the education budget for the governor's performance scholarship program, energy, technology, and other add-ons, the base student allocation, otherwise known as the BSA, has not changed or increased in 3 years despite inflation. Much of the testimony at Saturday's hearing emphasized the cuts that have been made in districts around the state because school operating dollars remain flat. For example, here in Juneau, the Education Board is planning to cut nearly $1.75 million, including 14 positions next year. Andy Story is the school board's vice president.
This is on top of the $4.7 million reductions last year. The Juneau School District has lost 104 positions and many services in the last 3 years. Children and parents need your support for a stable budget plan that maintains buying power for schools when fixed costs go up.
Story says Juneau has already cut nurses and special education. The state's largest school district, Anchorage, is expecting a $25 million gap between costs and state revenue, which is the largest portion of all school district budgets. Senate Finance Committee co-chairman Pete Kelly expects that they'll start work on the budget amendments today, and he says the operating budget is scheduled to go before the full Senate on Wednesday. House and Senate minority Democrats say parents and educators' concerns about funding are not being heard by their majority Republican counterparts. The minority is hosting a statewide hearing this afternoon called Save Our Schools. Anchorage Representative Harriet Drummond served three terms on the Anchorage School Board and says she identifies with the public's frustration.
We've been getting hundreds of emails and contacts here in our legislative offices from people who are very disturbed by the direction that this legislature is going on all of these issues, on preschool cuts, on vouchers, and on the classroom operating funds. I've had visits from school board members, from superintendents, from principals, students.
The hearing is scheduled today from 1 to 3 p.m. in room 203 of the State Capitol building and also by teleconference. Then tomorrow afternoon, a rally called Stand Up for Our Students will start at 4:15 outside the State Capitol. Former State Labor Commissioner and School Board member Ed Flanagan is already planning his speech. He blames flat funding on Governor Parnell.
Folks are just backing off because the governor has said you're not going to get an increase in the BSA. I think that's still incumbent upon everybody that cares about our kids' education to speak up and be heard with the legislature, that we can't fall back into the rut we were in the 90s of flat funding and having our kids fall behind. I mean, it's great to have a scholarship program, but if you're not funding the secondary sufficient for the kids to qualify for that scholarship, what's the point?
Organizers of Stand Up for Our Students hope school districts around the state will hold similar events this week as the legislature begins closing out the education budget. And lawmakers could not decide whether legislative branch employees and agencies should have access to Facebook and other social media sites at work. Lawmakers postponed a decision until perhaps this summer. At the March meeting of the Legislative Council, which is a joint committee that functions as chief executive, housekeeper, and business manager of the legislature, the question of social media policy occupied more than an hour at the council's time Thursday before it moved on to other issues, leaving the policy unresolved. The policy, which was approved in February of 2011 as a one-year experiment, allowed lawmakers themselves and the legislative press offices to use their official computers to post on Facebook, but no one else. The council agreed to extend that experiment until the council agrees to a formal policy. Weather forecast for the capital city calls for rain and rain showers for today and tonight, with winds to about 20 miles per hour this afternoon and temperatures today between 34 and 40 degrees. Then tomorrow, a mixture of rain and snow showers expected, and that's pretty much the forecast for the rest of the week, with temperatures largely in the 30s, maybe getting as high as 41 degrees by Friday and Saturday. Currently in Juneau, 36 degrees in the Mendenhall Valley and 38 degrees downtown. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. Buccaneer Drilling has filed a $30 million counterclaim to a drilling company's lawsuit, saying misrepresentations, misconduct, and delays led to a loss of revenue. What was planned as a short 8-day stay in Homer before leaving to drill in northern Cook Inlet has turned into a months-long delay. During that period, Buccaneer and the company hired to prepare and operate the $100 million rig, Archer Drilling parted ways and a series of lawsuits followed. The 400-foot-tall jackup rig, one of the largest such rigs in the world, arrived from Singapore in August. The plan was for the rig to stay a week or two before heading north to drill near Tyonic, but a series of problems has since dogged the rig and caused Buccaneer to miss a drilling window. New owners announced on Friday that they intend to reopen the Sunshine Bakery in Anchorage. The bakery was one of the state's largest manufacturers until Hostess Brand shut it down last November. The company had been bankrupt for close to a year and decided to sell off its properties. The Spinard Bakery was one of several in the region bought up by Franz Bakeries of Portland. They won't be baking Wonder Bread or Twinkies, though. Those brands were bought by other companies. Today is the deadline for comments on Alaska Electric Light and Power's federal application to investigate the feasibility of a Sheep Creek hydroelectric project. AELMP submitted its application to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission in January. The agency set a 60-day public comment period to end March 25th, which is today. If FERC grants the permit, the Juneau utility would be given 3 years to study the impact of a diversion dam on Sheep Creek south of Juneau. The environmental engineering studies would have to include the impact on wildlife, fish, and cultural resources of the Sheep Creek Valley. The project calls for a 10-foot-high, 75-foot-long diversion dam at about 620 feet above sea level. According to the company, it would create a small pond deep enough to get the water into a surface pipeline and to a power plant below. The Treadwell Mine operated a small dam on Sheep Creek from 1910 and 1943. Most of the area already belongs to AJT Mining Properties, which is a sister company to AELMP. Brief comments can be submitted online using FERC's e-comment system, and we have an easy way for you to get there. Just go to our website at ktoo.org, and we have a link for you there. And Coley, the polar bear cub, is moving to Buffalo, New York, at least for now. The Buffalo Zoo has another cub, and officials want to put the two together. Coley went to the Alaska Zoo in Anchorage earlier this month after his mother was killed by a subsistence hunter near Point Lay. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says the St. Louis Zoo is being considered as the cub's ultimate destination. Forecast calls for rain and rain showers for today and rain and snow showers for tomorrow. Temperatures today and tomorrow between 30 and 40 degrees. I'm Matt Miller. That's a look at news and weather for this half hour.